We're just seconds away from a conversation with Louise Gately. She's the author of Pursuit of a Dream, James Jordan, His Life and Legacy. You'll learn about his efforts to move the Iowa State Capitol from Iowa City to Des Moines, his involvement in the Underground Railroad, slaves from Missouri, and the building of a railroad and business empire in what is now known as West Des Moines, Iowa. You like history? You're going to love this. Inside on Business, the News Hour is made possible through the support of AARP. Real possibilities await you and your family, from connecting on matters of caregiving to fraud protection to tax help and voter advocacy. It's all right here. Google AARP Iowa.
Inside on Business, the News Hour is brought to you by Tarot International. Achieve, lead, and outclass with Tarot. TERO.com and the Iowa Business Journals, news and information for small to mid-sized businesses. IowaBusinessJournals.com.
Welcome back to the Business News Hour. Grateful that you have clicked through as always. You know, one of the things we love doing is finding individuals who have unique abilities to tell stories, and that's what we're going to do today. We're going to sit down with Louise Gately, who has just published a book. It's called James Jordan, His Life and His Legacy. And if you don't know who James Jordan was, let me just tickle your fantasy for just a minute. Think Underground Railroad. Think Iowa. Think how he was able to, well, by his sheer tenacity, build an empire here in the Hawkeye State. And it's great pleasure that we interview and have an opportunity to talk with the author. Her name is Louise Gately. Louise, welcome to the Business News Hour.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here.
Happy to be with you.
Okay, so let's talk about Louise first. Louise, you are a former teacher?
Well, that was one of my careers.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, that was the third one. Actually, I was an administrator in higher education, both overseas in Europe, and then here in Des Moines at Drake University.
Nice. Yeah, and then
I went into communications and marketing, and then I became a teacher in the Des Moines Public Schools.
Wow.
And then after that, I wrote grants.
Got it. So how did you get involved with this life and legacy of a man by the name of James Jordan?
Well, it started actually when I was at Drake, when I was a student in Drake, and I made friends with Vicki Baker and Russell. They had a cafeteria in the Drake neighborhood, and I worked there, and we became friends. And about 10 years after I graduated from Drake, I had lived overseas for a while and then came back and went to work at Drake, and come to find out, Vicki Baker was president of the West Des Moines Historical Society.
Yeah.
And they were in the process of purchasing, renovating, whatever, the Jordan House, which was almost going to be burned down. And some citizens in West Des Moines had gathered together to save the building. There had been a president prior to Vicki that was in charge of that effort. And then after that, she, I believe, passed away, and then Vicki took over, and she needed to write grants. And at the time, I was getting a master's degree in development, and I was focusing on grant writing. And I said, you know, I kind of know a little bit about it, not a lot, but I'm happy to help you because
sure.
We're friends. And so in the early 80s, we started to write grants to get the money that was needed to renovate this building. And we did not know much about James Jordan, but we did know that the house was on the Underground Railroad. And at the time, the Underground Railroad was popular in our society. You know, there was money available for mm-hmm. projects that would support the Underground Railroad. So we focused on getting money that way. And probably because of all of the grant money that we received, focused on that, the house became known as the Jordan House, one of the places on the Underground Railroad. But then as we continued to do more research, or at least, you know, Vicki was really busy running the organization and I did a lot of research, I realized that James Jordan was ever so much more important than just that, and that's a pretty important thing. But But I found out that he actually had led the legislation to bring the capital from Iowa City to Des Moines, mm-hmm. which is so significant. Later on in my research, I realized that he was probably the first citizen of the greater Des Moines area because he lived not far from the Polk County, the far western Polk County line, yet he was on the first city council. We would call it the city council. It was the town council of Fort Des Moines in 1851, and he would come in for meetings in 1851, and he considered Fort Des Moines, which later became, it was renamed Des Moines in the later 1850s. He was helping to run that town, and he considered Fort Des Moines to be his town, which is why he wanted the capital in Des Moines, because Des Moines was his town.
Yeah.
He worshipped in Des Moines. He came into town every day, every day.
And that was a slog in 1851, 1852.
Well, yeah, there were no roads.
Right.
There were no roads. There were trails. And there was actually a wagon trail that went by his house. And he also, he educated his children in Des Moines. Anna Bird had a little school in the old barracks from Fort Des Moines. That's where it started. Her husband was the first mayor of Fort Des Moines, the town. And he, and his name was Thompson Bird, and he was also the Presbyterian minister. So we have a park in Des Moines called Birdland Park,
right,
that was named after Thompson Bird. And what was interesting is that I found in further research that Thompson Bird was a pretty acute businessman. He bought a lot of land in Fort Des Moines at the time and made some good money, was the mayor. His wife ran the school. And then later on, they actually named a school after Anna Bird, one of the early elementary schools in the Des Moines public school system, Bird School.
It's a fascinating story, and Mr. Jordan would have been around when Iowa was admitted to the Union, which is pretty remarkable in and of itself. But he went on not only to do the Underground Railroad, but he was an industrialist. He was a capitalist. He made a lot of money himself, didn't he?
Yes. In various reports that I did discover, he actually raised 20,000 to 30,000 head of cattle and hogs or more, tens and tens of thousands of cattle and hogs. Now, his big issue or challenge was how do you raise all that livestock, and then how do you get it to market?
Right.
And back in the day before railroads, and the railroads didn't come to Des Moines until 1866 after the Civil War, they literally would float them down the river or steamboat them down the river. And I'm talking about the Des Moines River down to Keokuk. And then from Keokuk, they go usually to St. Louis down the Mississippi River on boats. Now we're talking tens and tens of thousands of head of livestock, and he wasn't alone. Others were raising it too, but he was one of the larger ones. And so he was always interested in could he get his product from here in central Iowa to market in St. Louis and then later on to Chicago. So what happened was, is he was very, very much of a leader in the effort to bring the railroad to central Iowa, and specifically, just like he did with the capital, to get it to his town, Des Moines.
And that railroad, of course, for those of you who remember history, there was a fellow by the name of Abraham Lincoln that had a great deal to do with constructing those railroads and buying the land along and through Iowa into Nebraska. So this all was interconnected in a sense because of the people, the movers and shakers of the time. How did James Jordan impact what is now West Des Moines?
Well, it goes back to the railroad. And he had a house, as I said, on the west side of Polk County, and he owned a lot of land around that farm. In fact, he had a lot of his children living on land and farming land that was very, very close to his own farm. Much of it was adjacent. Well, that land was part of what is now Valley Junction. And what happened was, is he saw that the railroads were coming from Des Moines and going out into western Iowa. And he wanted to make sure that there were some tracks laid near his home so that he could bring his cattle in from the western areas. He ranged his cattle as far west as Atlantic, Iowa, 60 miles west of here. He ranged a lot of his cattle up in Dallas County. And he would bring that, he wanted to bring his cattle down to rail yards close to his home and be able to put them on railroad cars. And so he talked to the railroad, and they said, well, we're really going to be building our railroads to Waukee. No, we're not going to build tracks, you know, over by you. And he said, how much money will it take? And they reached an agreement. And not only was there money involved, but also he needed to promise the railroad. They asked him to promise them that he would build some housing for the railroad workers. And that was down around 8th Street and Railroad in the beginning. And that was also where his yards were for his livestock.
Our conversation is with Louise Gately, who has written the book James Jordan, His Life and His Legacy, about a man from the East Coast who came all the way to Iowa and then had a major impact on our quality of life even today. Now, and if we fast forward to 2019, the rail yards that are just several hundred yards away from where we're sitting right now in Valley Junction, that was a huge economic boon to this area. And recently, some entrepreneurs have taken some of those old buildings and restructured them into a distillery, into an eating establishment, and a food truck location. It's really remarkable how this area has now become, once again, a destination.
Yes, actually, that building that you're talking about was the roundhouse for the Rock Island Railroad. Right. So let's talk about what happened. So he did get tracks built to his a location close to his home, so he could literally oversee all of this loading of cattle and so forth. Easily, his home was about maybe a mile or so away from where the cattle yards were at that point, and that was in the early 1870s. And more commerce began to happen. Now, we're talking about 8th and Railroad, but actually the main drag of the main street of Valley Junction is 5th Street. Well, what happened was, as more and more commerce began to happen in this area around those railroad those livestock yards, he had sold land to two developers, Conrad Youngerman and Simon Cassidy. People who know Des Moines history will probably recognize particularly Simon Cassidy's name. And what they did is they took that land that they'd gotten, that they'd purchased, and they had a company called Hawkeye Investments, and they platted out homes along in the 5th Street area, a little bit away from the cattle yards, and a town was born. And that was born probably in the later 1870s, later 1880s, early 1890s. And then after that, the Rock Island looked at this area and said, oh, we need a roundhouse. So what we're going to do is we're going to approach this community and see whether or not we could, you know, get a roundhouse built. And then the Rock Island would come in and establish even more opportunities for people to work in this area. And so it just started to really get going.
Let's dial back just a little bit and talk for a moment, if we can, about the Underground Railroad. I think many people might be surprised that Iowa was one of those turning points for individuals who were fleeing slavery in the South, and they made their way up through Iowa to places like West Des Moines at the time, or Fort Des Moines, mm-hmm. is what we would call it. How extensive a network was that, Louise?
Well, what I didn't understand before I wrote the book, I guess I should say, it took me 30 years to do all the research and to get the book written. So as I was doing my research, what I didn't understand was how many slaves were residing in north central Missouri. They actually called it Little Dixie. It is an area along the Missouri River that is east of Kansas City. So when you think about Kansas City and, you know, the jazz there and the blues and also St. Louis, you understand that some of that came from that Little Dixie area. They said that Little Dixie was so much like the South that it was more than the South. It was just full of slaves. And those slaves were treated very harshly. And there was a man who a lot of us who've studied American history, we know this name, John Brown. And John Brown came from the East, from New York, and he was very, very upset about the whole issue of slavery from a religious standpoint, from a moral standpoint. And a lot of people thought he was kind of a nutcase. And he had six sons, and they thought that they were a little crazy too. But John Brown believed so much in what he was doing, and he literally knew that there was no way to, there were no laws, there was nothing to help these poor slaves who had terrible, terrible lives in that area, and except for to really take matters into his own hands. And there was also a big, big fight going on in the in national politics, where there were some states that were coming in as slave states and some states that were coming in as free states. And that was the case with Kansas and Nebraska. Mm-hmm. So they called Kansas Bleeding Kansas. So from all of this, the abolitionists, and John Brown was not alone, but he was one of the ones that we know the most about. He would actually get slaves from these plantations that were in Missouri, and he would help them escape, and he would get them into Nebraska, which was at that point not considered part of the United States. It was not in our country.
Yes.
Get them to Nebraska City, outside of the country, then have them lay low for a while, and then he would bring them across the Missouri River into southwestern Iowa, and then they would slowly start their trek across southern Iowa. And there were several different places that they could stop. Many we don't know about. There were quite a few that we have found out about. And we call those that area, any place that helped slaves, the Network to Freedom. And the Jordan House is one of them, but there were many in this, actually in the Des Moines area. And we know now that there were quite a few people supporting it. James Jordan actually was the chief conductor of the Underground Railroad in Polk County. So he embraced this cause. And not only did James Jordan embrace it, but so did both of his wives. You couldn't do it without them. And also the family. I mean, this was very illegal to harbor fugitive slaves that was stolen property.
Right.
And to be caught with stolen property on your property, they could have burnt down his house. They could have thrown him in jail. Utmost secrecy was a necessity. And so what happened was even the children who knew about it, his children, he had quite a few children, they never talked about it. The first time in my research that I ever heard or saw one of his children even remotely mention it was in a piece in 1875, over a decade after the Civil War. Yes, so it was a big deal.
Our guest is Louise Gately, ladies and gentlemen. She is the writer of James Jordan, His Life and His Legacy. And if you're at all in tune with regard to history and what went on in not only central Iowa, but Iowa, as the move, think about that for just a moment. The capital of the state of Iowa was in Iowa City, and how it got moved to the Des Moines area. It's a fascinating story. And I have to tell you, I was reading through the book in advance of our conversation. I am stunned at the amount of detail. This did take a long time to research and write.
Well, what happened was is that there were so many things, elements of the book that we couldn't even cover in this visit with you. But I didn't understand them. I'm not from Iowa. I'm from Wisconsin. I really didn't understand Iowa history. My major was Renaissance and Reformation in college. American history wasn't my thing. So I was on a huge learning curve. And so I'd find out that, say, for example, James Jordan helped start the State Bank of Iowa. Well, so great. I'm so glad he did that. But what's the significance? Well, it must have been significant if it was mentioned in some of the in his obituary or in, you know, other articles or whatever that I, you know, uncovered with his name in it. And so I had to educate myself about, well, why would that be important? Why is it, you know, what was the big deal about, you know, having the capital in Des Moines rather than say in Prairie City or something, you know, what's the significance of that? I mean, we know about the Underground Railroad, but there were so many other things that were involved in his story. And so I spent a lot of time educating myself about what it was that he did, because I didn't really understand it. And so I tried to put that in the book in a readable way where people would understand why that was significant to the history of James Jordan, the area, the towns, whatever.
It is a fascinating book and a look at history from the eyes of Louise Gately. It is called James Jordan, His Life and His Legacy. You want more? We will have links up on our radio blog so you can find out more about this. Louise, thank you so much for spending some time with us. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you. Happy to do it.
Once again, that was Louise Gately, the author of Pursuit of a Dream, James Jordan, His Life and His Legacy. We will have links up on our radio blog so you can find out where you can pick up your copy. Well, that about wraps it up for today. For all of us associated with the Business News Hour, Chap Ramsey is our production coordinator. Aaron Libby is in charge of marketing and sales. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease. And the music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted exclusively for the Business News Hour by our friend James Goodlett from Jam Good Productions. For all those folks, my name's Michael Libby. Have yourself a wonderful evening. Be safe, be well, be careful. Most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good day.